I want to welcome everybody at all of our campuses, and a special welcome to those of you watching online at home. Thank you for taking some of your time today to join with us in worship as we prepare for Christmas. Can you believe it's the third weekend in Advent, the four-week season that precedes Christmas? I'm a typical guy. I get an awful lot to do and very little time. So this week's theme, Beyond the Impossible, is a little like my life right now, trying to move forward. We've been preparing for Christmas by stretching beyond the daily grind, beyond unanswered prayer. Today we're going to think about beyond the impossible. Our Bible stories have been about the encounter of very ordinary people with heavenly messengers, with angels who have come and spoke to them, and what happens next. And these stories are certainly beyond my experience. I have never met an angel in my life. But it's not only trying to imagine angels that seems a little beyond comprehension. There's a lot of things that seem quite impossible to us. You can't really make a rope out of sand. You can't climb up to the moon in a piece of string. You can't drink the ocean dry. Apparently you can't count votes in Florida either. It's just difficult. But some things in life really are beyond impossible. Finding the right gift. Finding the right person so you'd have somebody to share your gift with. Finding your way when your partner's given up on you. Finding friends. Finding a place to belong, finding hope when the doctor says infertility, finding a way forward when the doctor says cancer, finding a job, finding somewhere to live, finding direction in my life when I feel stuck, finding purpose, finding my way back to God. It all seems beyond impossible. If that's you today, or that's somebody you love and you care for, I want to invite you to pay attention. Because just possibly today, you could find a way forward to go beyond the impossible. Our Bible stories in the New Testament, the second half of our Bible, it's one of the accounts of the life of Jesus, Luke's Gospel. And I want to read from chapter 1, a story that some of you may know quite well. Luke chapter 1, beginning at verse 26. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age, and she who was said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month. For no word from God will ever fail." "I'm the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." And then the angel left her. I've always thought it'd be really nice if Mary's just sitting in her room, maybe getting ready to go to bed, something like that. The angel pops up and she's thinking, "Cool, I've always wanted to meet an angel." But that's not what's happening. She's freaking out. Like all angel stories, the angel always has to start out by saying, "Don't be afraid, fear not." Everybody's terrified. Kyle reminded us last week, that's too late saying fear not when you're already quivering. But what stands out for me is not the fact that an angel shows up in her room and has a conversation with her. It's not even that God has a particular message for her. What stands out to me most is the sense of movement, the steps that Mary takes, that we're invited to take, to move beyond the impossible. So right now, if you have something that feels impossible in your life, financially, relationally, physically, emotionally, vocationally, medically, I want to invite you to listen carefully. I want to invite you to come on the journey with Mary and with me and open yourself to the possibility of going beyond the impossible. Some of the story kind of impossible, kind of not. Some of it definitely was incredible in the moment that it happens. I mean, the first hint of that is where this story takes place, in Nazareth, a town in Galilee. You may know or you may not know, Nazareth is never mentioned in the Bible up until this point. You can go through the entire Old Testament. Nobody says a word about Nazareth. It doesn't show up till Luke mentions it here. In fact, there was a Jewish historian, a man called Josephus, round about these times. He did a big survey tour of Galilee for the authorities, and he wrote down and listed out the names of all the towns, what's going on there, what they were remarkable for, what he needed to say. And when Josephus wrote it down, he named 56 towns in Galilee. Nazareth wasn't one of them. It wasn't one of them. It wasn't really a town. A hamlet maybe, a village, couple of shacks, who knows, but it wasn't much. It was a place that nobody noticed. It was a no-hope town. Nobody stopped there to gas up their camel or their donkey. They just went right past. Alberta's smallest town is called Granham. 447 people live there. Anybody know what that is? Well, you guys travel around a whole lot. Highway 2 on the way to Fort McLeod. Alberta's smallest village is called Gadsby. It has 40 people there, just east of Settler. I looked up hamlets. It turns there's dozens and dozens of them. The smallest ones, there are several, with a population of 5. 5! I often have more people than that in my home. That's Nazareth, easily bypassed, a nowhere place. I mean, last weekend we were thinking about the story of Zechariah. Zechariah is a priest serving in the temple. The temple's in Jerusalem. The temple is God's house where heaven and earth meet. In Jerusalem, the city of David, the Zion set on a hill. That's where you'd expect God to show up. That's where you think an angel might show up and have something to say. But Nazareth, really? In fact, one of Jesus' first followers, when he heard where Jesus actually came from, look at his words. He says, Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? Really? Nazareth? Maybe that's how you feel today. You're at a place where you feel stuck. A place you didn't choose. A place you never expected to be. A place you certainly don't expect God to show up. A place where you feel neglected. Or rejected, or forgotten. A nowhere place. I've got good news for you today. God knows your address. God knows your address. He knows where you live. He's got it marked out in his map. He really does. He knows how to find you. He can do the most incredible things in the most incredible places. Just look at Nazareth. It's not only the story that makes us a little incredible, the place. It's the people. I mean, think about it. What's Mary thinking when she hears the angel's words? Highly favored, completely overlooked would be more likely the truth. She's a nobody, a working guy's fiance in this tiny place where nobody lives, nothing's going on. They were people with no status and no resources. When baby Jesus was born, she didn't really have the typical offering to go to the temple with. They had to grab a pigeon and drop it off. It's all they had. Nobody noticed Mary. A teenage girl nobody's ever heard of. The angel shows up and she's like, whoa, you talking to me? Is there somebody else in the room? Hello? You see, Mary's a nobody. The somebodies of the world, well, maybe Caesar Augustus, the emperor in Rome, he's a somebody. Maybe King Herod sitting on his throne in Jerusalem, he's a somebody. She's a nobody. Is that you this Christmas? Overlooked? Unnoticed? Forgotten? A nobody? Unloved, betrayed, heartbroken, sick, unemployed. There's good news today. God sees you. God hears you. He knows you. Just look at Mary. And then there's this whole baby situation. You know, sometimes people like me, we look back on the ancients a couple of thousand years ago and think, they must have been so credulous. They'd believe absolutely anything. Angels showing up, virgin births, what's all this about? They obviously believe it, but actually it's not true. It's not true. They may not have understood genetics the way we do right now. They didn't have that advantage. But they all knew full well how babies were made. And they knew that telling tall stories about it was just a way of trying to cover up some of your mistakes. They got that. In fact, you see this in Mary. Mary's first question to the angel is not really about the identity of the baby, son of God, you say. That's not what she asks about. It's about the impossibility of the whole situation. How will this be, Mary asked the angel, since I'm a virgin? She knew how women got pregnant, and she certainly wasn't. It's impossible. It's physically impossible. Virgins don't have babies. It's beyond impossible. Is that you today? Facing the beyond impossible? God, I don't know how you can possibly ask me to trust you when I have so little. And you're asking me to trust. You're asking me to be generous. You're asking me to open my house, my life with hospitality and support causes. I can't do that. I don't have any food. God, I don't believe it's possible to save my marriage. Not after what's happened. Not after what's been done and the things that we've said. There's no way. It's impossible. God, I don't believe you could ever help me reconcile my relationship with my kids. Not after what they did, not after how I responded to them. That's beyond impossible. God, there's no way you could heal this person I love. The doctors have said we're at the end of the line. They've told us to prepare for the worst and make arrangements. It's not possible, God. It's beyond impossible. And that's what we see with Mary. She says it's impossible. There's no way. It's beyond impossible. Do you notice what the angel said to her? The angel's reply? No word from God will ever fail. Or you could translate it like this. For nothing will be impossible with God. I don't know who all's here today or watching online, but I believe some of you are here for this very moment. I have a sense that there's some of you here facing things in your life that you don't think it's possible to change. Not even for God to change. And today you need to know, nothing is impossible for God. What you think is impossible is absolutely, completely possible with God. We serve a God who is all-knowing, ever-present, all-powerful. One word is all it takes and God could intervene in your situation. Our God is that good, our God is that powerful. All things are possible with God. Mary says, no way. God says, way. What we think is totally impossible is totally possible for God. Are you ready today to make the journey from impossible to possible? Can you imagine Mary before this angel shows up in her life, betrothed, engaged, planning her future? She's been practicing her signature, spelling out her new last name. She's got a Pinterest board with all her wedding plans mapped out on it. She's been picking out names for any children God might choose to bless them with. James is a great name, just saying, if you're pregnant. Yeah, she called her next kid James, I'm just saying. And then there's this interruption. God invades her space. The angel's right up in her grill. God speaks to the situation. It couldn't come at a less convenient moment. I've got things to do. There's a wedding to plan. The clock is ticking, Mr. Angel. This is not the right time. That's sometimes how I feel with interruptions. I don't mean little things like a phone call or somebody knocking on your door wanting a quick word. It's more those huge interruptions in life when you feel like somebody's T-boned you on the highway and your life is coming unhinged by what just happened. You ever been there? Pretty sure you have. Most of us kind of have some plans written out for our lives, even if only in our head, study, job, partner, house, kids, grandkids, retirement, travel. We've written it all out and we hope God will show up and bless it because we'd like that very much, thank you. But what if God shows up and decides to write a new story? What if God doesn't want what we want? What if God doesn't want for your life what you want? What are you going to do then? What if he has other plans? What if he interrupts Mary's plan? Wedding, the dress fits, babies, happily ever after. And God has a new plan. Pregnant, no dad, scandal, homeless, refugee, danger. Would you consider that situation blessed and highly favored? I don't think so. I wouldn't. She didn't think she'd won the lottery that day. This is a big interruption. And as I read my Bible, it feels to me that God specializes in this sort of stuff, interrupting people. Moses, he's out there looking after his sheep in the hillside, sees a little bush on fire, goes over to have a look. The next thing you know, God's interrupting his life with talk of liberation and Exodus. Jonah, he's on his Mediterranean cruise, hoping to get to Santorini and see all the pretty buildings there. And suddenly God interrupts. There's a storm, there's a whale, there's a missionary assignment. Joseph, he's just playing at being an annoying little brother, ticking off his parents, ticking off his siblings, enjoying making everybody mad. Gets chucked in a hole in the ground because God interrupts. He has a new plan for him. Sold, slave, prisoner, but going to save a nation. Paul, or Saul as he was knowing at the time, busy arresting Christians, getting on with his job, secret agent Saul. God arrested him and invited him to something far more significant. You see, I think if you're anything like me, it's easier to see God getting in our face as being an interruption, much more than being an invitation. I had an encounter with somebody a few weeks ago. It was quite interesting, actually. I was coming downstairs, wanted to get some soup for my lunch. I was in a rush, watching the clock. And I saw somebody trying to get into the bookstore. I thought it was her manager, Angela. And I'm being kind of silly. I'm going, "Hey, Ange, no keys." And this lady turns around and it's not her. And I'm like, sorry. She wanted to get a card, but the store shut for stock keeping inventory. And I said, "I could let you in if you want." She said, "No, it's fine. I work in a store. I know how important this sort of thing is." And I'm going, "Okay. And I want to get my soup. Like, I've got a meeting to get to. Let's chop, chop, woman." And she says, "Can I ask you something?" I'm like, "Oh." "Well, only on the inside. On the outside, I'm being very professional." She's lost somebody in her life. And we begin to have this conversation about loss and where God is in the journey. And when we were all done and I prayed for her and I turned to walk away, she said to me, "I think I came here for a reason, and it wasn't to get a card. It was to meet you." Last night, her friend who attends here showed me a text on her phone from that very day when that happened, when her friend wrote to her and said, "I met this guy. He has a funny accent." We would call things like that a divine appointment, but sometimes, honestly, it just feels like an interruption. It's like God interrupts us, but with an invitation to something better. He might take you somewhere new. He might ask you to do something different. He may have plans for you that are wildly out of your control, things you'd never imagine on your own. Maybe the interruption is an invitation to help somebody. Maybe you're not really into church and somebody just brought you here and it's been interrupting your Christmas plans, and now you discover an invitation to become a follower of Jesus. Maybe you came to church and you thought, "I'll just endure it, get this over with, get in, get out, get going," and then something happened. Maybe it was a song, did something. Maybe somebody said something, touched your heart. It was like God was speaking to you and suddenly you felt your heart being changed. Something's going on in the inside. You found yourself being drawn to God, and one day you had a conversation with Jesus. You asked him to forgive you. You asked him to become the Lord and leader of your life. You told him you wanted to follow. And you experienced the supernatural presence of God for the very first time. And something in you is dramatically changed. You're different. The Bible calls it a new creation. You're completely different. The interruption was an invitation to a brand new life with Jesus. And it still continues. Maybe you get a friend in hospital. You think you should go see them. You feel this nudge in your heart that you should really go and do something. But, "Oh, look at the time. It's Christmas. It's only like how many days away? There's a million things to do. I don't have time for this." And then you find yourself driving to the hospital anyway. Something inside is compelling you to get there. That's God. And then you get there and you're having this conversation. You're still thinking about your watch, at least in the inside. And you're trying to get out of it, get going. You have your presents to buy. And you're wondering what's going on. And you say something and your friend is utterly transfixed and transformed. And you said something that meant nothing to you and it meant everything to them. And you're thinking, "Whoa, God's using me like this?" Met with a young lady from our church this past week. We had lunch. She's telling me her story of how God has called her to become an international worker and move to a new country. And the story began a few years ago. And part of that story was she's wrestling with this whole thing. What am I doing with my life? God, you're not telling me anything. What am I supposed to do? And she's reading through Mark chapter 10, asking God, "Could you just explain this to me? I don't know what I'm doing." And that weekend, she came to church, and for reasons I would never have known, I preached on that very same passage, Mark 10, and God spoke to her and placed his call upon her life. I didn't know what I was doing. Or maybe you've come to church and you hear there's a need, and you're thinking, "Oh man, they need other people in this. I don't have the skill set for this. Somebody else should do it." And then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, something's happened. You're in Discovery Room, in Discovery Land, in the preschool, and you're like, "How did I end up here? What happened? I don't even like kids." What happened? You accepted God's invitation. That's what happened. God's interruption moved you to something better. And now, hanging out with a bunch of three-year-olds is the best hour of your week, as you get to love on them and tell them about Jesus, because God's interruptions become the invitations of our lives. Are you ready to move in your journey from interruption to invitation? Mary had plans for her life. And so often God's purposes for our lives are so wildly different than our plans. Mary certainly found it out. The angel says to her, "You'll conceive and give birth to a son, and you're to call him Jesus. He will be great and be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." I mean, think about it. Think about what's going through her head as she hears these words. "Oh, wow, I've been chosen to become the mother of God, the Son of God. But whoa, what are people going to think? I'm not even married. whoa, God has shown me favor, but I got to tell Joseph, hey, Joe, can we talk? You might want to sit down. God's purpose was way different than her plans. Maybe you found that out too. Maybe you dreamed of a healthy, perfect family, expecting a beautiful little baby. And then you discover you're going to have a special needs child. And you think, what on earth? Where'd that come from? What'd I do? What did we do wrong? God, how are you in this? And as you care and love on that child, you discover the love that comes from that child to you and you give in return. You discover that you never thought you could love another human being as much as you do right now, with a heart that could burst. And God's purposes are way different than your plans. Maybe you've lost your job. Feels like the worst thing ever. Your savings are running out. You don't know what you're going to do. You're trying to make Christmas happen. You're terrified. You're wondering, am I going to be able to keep my house? What's next year going to look like? And it's just a big mess. And you're thinking, God, where are you? Where are you in all this? How is this possible? And somehow when the employment opportunities evaporate, one opportunity comes along to start that business you always wanted to do. And it flourishes and grows. And you look back in it and think, God, wow. What I thought was a disaster was actually a blessing because God's purposes are different than my plans. Do you know what your purpose for your life is? What God's purpose is? Is it to start a ministry? Is it to volunteer in a ministry? Is it to go back to school? Is it a career change? Is it to lead your family to Jesus? Do you know what God's purpose for your life actually is? God's big purpose was to rescue people like you and me. People who had lost their way. That's what Jesus said he came to do. He came to find us. He came to get hold of us, looking for us, forgiving us, enabling us to start all over again, giving us the strength and courage and hope to move forward in life, helping us find our way home to God. That's something you could discover right now, today, forgiveness. A brand new start, following Jesus in the greatest adventure of life. God sent Jesus for you, and Jesus needed a mum, and that was Mary's purpose. Are you ready to journey from your plan to God's purpose? There's one other journey to consider. From fear to faith. It's the fear of saying yes to God. Most of us like having the idea of God hanging around, especially to answer prayers when we need him. In fact, people I know that don't even believe in God quite like the idea of the God they don't believe in being around to answer their prayers. It's how it works. When I'm sick, he's the great physician. I'm really pleased. When I'm broke, he's the great provider. Yay, God. When I'm lonely, he's the friend who sticks closer than a brother. When I'm sad, he's promised to comfort me. We like the idea of God being close. Just not too close. I mean, what if he asks something from me? What if he asks me to move from impossible to possible? What if he asks me to move from interruption to invitation? What if he wants me to move from my plans to his purpose? What if he's moving me from fear to faith? We know what that feels like. We do. That's why you have call display on your phone. Because you see who it is and you know they want something and you can reject the call. It's why we go to the mall and you see somebody walking the other way and you're like, I've seen you, I know. And sometimes we feel that way about God too. I mean, what if he asked me to go to Africa as an international worker? I don't like bugs. What if he asked me to tell somebody about Jesus? That's the pastor's job. What if he asked me to be beyond generous? What's Christmas going to come along? What if? There's this lurking sense that if I turn my life over completely to Jesus, he's going to ask me to do something that seems so far beyond, different than I expected, and fear, it can easily overwhelm us. Sometimes fear is like faith. It's like having faith in the worst possible outcome. What if the economy gets worse? What if I lose my job? What if somebody I love gets cancer? What if I marry the wrong person and kind of regret it, but my kids look like them and I have to see them forever? It's a constant reminder of my choices. What if? You got to wonder what was going on in Mary's mind at this point. She had every reason to be afraid. I mean, think about it. Basically, at this moment in life, her life is ruined. Her reputation is ruined. An unmarried, pregnant teenage girl in that culture, it's hard enough now. It was an awful thing then, rejected by everybody, or much worse. And add to that the fact she's engaged to a guy. Everybody knows they're living apart. Everybody knows the baby's not his even. And she tries telling them her story. Her relationship with her fiancé and her parents are ruined. They'd think she's a slut. Someone who'd betrayed the people she loved most. Who would want her now? You think she was afraid, and yet God is somehow stirring faith in her heart. What is God asking you to have faith for? What is he asking you to do right now, and you're terrified? Some of you know exactly what it is. You could write it down. Maybe you need to have a conversation with somebody. There's some things that need to be said. Maybe some of us need to step up and volunteer. And we know God's been asking us, and we've been putting it off forever. Maybe some of us need to learn what it means to become open-handed with our generosity and hospitality. Maybe some of us need to make some lifestyle changes and choices so that we're building our life to honor God, all for Jesus. What's God asking you to do? What are you going to do? Maybe some of us need to take some time for what's left of this weekend to figure it out. God, what are you asking me to do? What are you speaking into my life? Where do I need to discover faith? Look at Mary. She says, "I'm the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." And then the angel left her. She knows who she is. She knows she's God's kid, his little girl, beloved and chosen. She knows that she belongs to him, even when she doesn't fully understand what he's doing or why. She trusts him. She trusts him with the outcome, and she says yes. She's moving from fear to faith. She's trusting that God knows what he's doing. She's trusting that he's more than able to take care of her. She's trusting that the outcome belongs to God. Have you done that? Have you heard God's voice? Have you heard him calling out to you and you've said, "I trust you. I will." You said yes. Have you risked everything and said, "I'm yours, all that I have, all the years I've got left, my family, everything I've got. I'm trusting you with everything. I'll believe, I'll surrender, I'll have faith." Have you done that? It was no trite response for Mary. We know the implications. How do you tell your fiancé that you're pregnant? By the Holy Spirit, no less. Try explaining that to your parents. What would the neighbors think? And if the baby's going to be the new king, what would the current king think? We all know what the current king thought. He started a genocide to try and catch this little baby boy. Who's going to look after us? Are we going to make it? Are we going to end up as refugees? We're nowhere to live. God's purpose looks terrifying. And Mary says yes. The reality is that Mary isn't driven by her circumstances, or what anybody else thought about her. She's only concerned what her heavenly father thought. And he'd made that abundantly clear when Gabriel first started the conversation. "Mary, you found great favor with your dad in heaven. Mary, you're highly blessed. The Lord is with you." This was the defining reality for Mary. Are you ready to journey from fear to faith? I know this is all a lot to take in, and just before Christmas, couldn't we have something a bit more cheery to keep us going? A little less confrontational, perhaps? Maybe Mary was thinking that too. How many of us can read music? Oh, quite a few. You're rolling up. That's good. Not me. I'm dyslexic. I can barely read English. But I know enough to know the treble clefs on the top with the high notes and the bass clefs down on the bottom with the low notes, and they get played kind of simultaneously. Imagine your life is the bass clef, the stave down at the bottom. That's your life down there, all those little tadpoles swimming on it. You could mark everything down in your life there, the impossibilities, the interruptions, your plans, your fears. You could list them out. What is it that's overwhelming you right now down at the bottom that you don't have the courage to deal with? I'm guessing you know already. But I want to invite you to look up. Look up to this treble clef of life where God is. Look up to see what God has already done for you. That Jesus came as that baby for you. That he taught us and lived his life, making a difference in their world. That he gave his life as a sacrifice for your disobedience and sin. That he was risen from the dead, victorious over death, over sin, over the enemy of our soul. That he's ascended on high and enthroned as the King of the universe. That he already forgives you. That he's already restoring you. That his Holy Spirit has been poured out upon his people. God has already done everything that needs to be done. He's just waiting for you to say yes, like Mary. Jesus arrived in Jerusalem for the very last time with his friends. And he had an Advent message for them. Not Advent like Christmas and baby Jesus and wise men. Advent like the second Advent. like his return, when he comes not as an infant, but as a conquering king, triumphant over all, that kind of Advent. And Jesus says this to them, there'll be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars. On the earth, nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. People will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming in the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. And at that time, they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. When these things begin to take place, stand up, lift up your heads, for your redemption is drawing near. Stand up, lift up your heads, look up, in contradiction to the horrors of our world, of war, of genocide, of famine and disaster. Jesus says, look up, in contradiction to the reality of your life with plans and disarray, with your fears, with your impossibilities. Jesus says, look up. Beyond our fears, beyond our facts, beyond our failures, beyond our expectations, beyond our own planning, the Prince of Peace comes and he says, look up, beyond the impossible. Jesus is here, right now, waiting for you. And so today I'm going to invite you to take a risk. And that's to talk with Jesus about those impossibilities of your life. Those things down there in the bottom on the bass clef that never seem to change. I'm going to invite our prayer teams, if you'd come forward right now. I know I'm still talking, but if you'd do that for me, I'd appreciate it. Just come to the front, fill up the front area. We want to put the lights down, because I know this is difficult for you too. But here's what I'm going to invite you to do. And that's to come and pray with somebody and have that conversation with Jesus in the place where you feel stuck or forgotten or your plans are in disarray. Because Jesus wants today to carry you beyond the impossible. Let's start here. If you're unemployed today, or you're underemployed, you're barely making it, or worried about what's going to happen, or you're terrified you're going to lose your job in the new year, I'm going to invite you right now, stand up, walk out, walk into the aisle, and come to the front. I know people will look at you, and I know it's terrifying. It would be even more terrifying to miss the opportunity for God to take you from impossible to possible. And today, if you need to find work, and I'm going to invite you to come and pray with somebody that God will take you beyond the impossible right here, right now, right today, that he will change everything about your life. Would you do that and come forward and pray? We're waiting. Jesus is waiting. He can go beyond the impossible. He can take you beyond the interruption. He can go beyond your ruined plan. He can take you beyond your fear right now. Maybe it's a healthcare need that you have right now. Maybe you're like me and you're sick. And the doctor says terrifying things to you. You don't know what to do. Why don't you come and pray? In all of our services and all of our campuses, people have been coming forward to pray. I'd invite you to do that right now. You don't need to wait. If you want God to take your life beyond the impossible, he's willing to do it. He's ready to do it. He's waiting for you right now. Maybe you're here and your life's in emotional disarray. You don't know how to fix what's broken. Honestly, I wouldn't know how to tell you how to fix what's broken either, but God can fix that. He specializes in possible stuff. And so I'm going to ask you, would you come and pray with somebody? Because today, God is going to take you from impossible to possible. Maybe you hear God calling out to you. Jesus is whispering your name because he knows where you live. Could be for the first time. Could be for the 100th time. Don't ignore him. Come right now and play through. Don't shrug off the interruption in your life because suddenly I've turned the lights down and I'm asking you to embarrass yourself. Respond to God. Today is the moment for you to move beyond the impossible. To move beyond the interruption. Beyond the broken plans. Beyond our crippling fears. And discover there's a God who loves you more than you could ever know. Don't wait. Don't ignore. Come and let him change everything in your life right here, right now.